Cars, start your engines!
Hit the pace car! What for? Because you hit every other damn thing out there, I want you to be perfect!
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. You can see him. He talks to me.
He didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing's son is racing.
Hey, race fans, welcome to the Hoobazoo Radio Network. Welcome to another edition of Drafting the Circuits. My name is Frank Santoroski. I'll be your host for the next hour or more as we discuss everything racing from the past week. Before we get into our conversation, let me introduce you to the stellar panel I have assembled tonight. First and foremost, my good friend, Mr. Gray Warren from Richard Childress Racing. Gray, good to talk to you tonight.
Hello, hello. Hope everyone's doing great.
Good to have you here, sir. Also, Mr. Joey Barnes from IndyCar.com is with us again. Joey is in rare form as always. Joey, how are you, buddy?
Been better. I was just better.
All right, yeah. Don't be too excited now. All right. Mr. Seth Eggert, NASCAR correspondent over there at Motorsports Tribune. Seth, how are you?
I'm doing good.
All right, all right. Christopher DeHardy from Motorsports Tribune, how are you?
I've had a great day so far.
All right, all right. Richard Uden, one of my best friends in the world. What's going on, Richard, from Richard Childress Racing?
I'm doing good, thanks. Hope everybody else is as well.
All right. And new to the panel tonight, Mr. Aaron Bearden, Motorsports editor over at Kickin' the Tires. Aaron, welcome to the show. Good to have you here tonight.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I think I'm off to an encumbered start, though.
Okay, yeah, well, we'll have to see how the finish comes out then, all right? If we need a green-white checkered and a red flag, we'll let you know. So, good week of racing this week, but kind of a crazy week overall. A lot going on in the world. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that all of us over here drafting the circuits, our hearts go out to everyone and anyone that was affected by this tragedy out in Las Vegas. And it had a little bit of a racing incident there. The daughter of the owner of Bakersfield Speedway was one of the victims there. So sad to hear that. We are thinking about those folks as we talk about racing tonight. A senseless tragedy. And it's just sad that these things happened in our world. I want to say, Tom Petty, thanks for the hits, love that guy. Let's get into racing. Let's talk about what we are and what our platform is. And again, there's more sad news. Robert Yates, former NASCAR team owner, lost his battle with liver cancer. He was 74 years old. He was recently slated to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was one of the powerhouse teams. I recall I started watching NASCAR in the very late 80s. I had grown up a Formula One and IndyCar road course guy, but I started to pay attention to NASCAR then. I remember Robert Yates Racing being one of those powerhouse teams, and if you look at some of the guys that have driven for him, that reads like a Hall of Fame in itself. Davey Allison, Dale Jarrett, Ricky Rudd drove for him for a time, the great Ernie Irvin. He'll be sorely missed. Some really nice comments I was reading. The racing world is outpouring stories about him and whatnot. Really nice stuff coming from his son, Doug Yates, who co-owned the team with them. But now, Gray, you've been in the sport for quite a long time, through the whole tenure of the time that Yates was active in the sports. And I'm sure you've got some thoughts to share on Robert Yates.
Robert Yates, simply put, was a racer and a gentleman. He's one of the nicest people in the garage area. I first got to know Robert back in the late 80s when I was working with Bill Davis Racing, and we were working on the Ford Busch Grand National V6 program. And our paths crossed a lot during those times. And Robert was just like I said, just a gentleman, one of the nicest people you'd ever meet. A pioneer of sorts in the sport, but an innovator. He started out with the famed Holman Moody team back in the 60s as an engine builder. Had built many engines, many race winning engines for many, many drivers over the years. He went on to become a team owner. He won as a team owner. He won the 1999 Winston Cup Championship with Dale Jarrett. He won three Daytona 500s. He won a three Brickyard 400s. And I think his team, Robert Yates Racing, accumulated about 57 wins. In their time in NASCAR. So yeah, it was a big loss. Again, very happy to see him voted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Very, very deserving. It's a loss for the sport, and we're all going to miss him terribly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was reading up on Robert earlier today, and you know, it's an interesting statistic. Their first race, you know, out of the box, nearly won the Daytona 500 with Davey Allison, who finished, you know, behind his dad Bobby, finished second in their first race. I mean, that's you're talking about just coming out of the box strong like that, and then that kind of set the tone for that team for the next several years. So, Seth, you have some comments on Robert Yates?
Yeah, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, like Gray said, or will be a Hall of Famer in a couple months. I mean, he was one of the nicest guys in the garage area. There were some stories I heard earlier today in which some local drivers would just go and ask him what they needed to do with their engine to be more competitive. He would ask what kind of tire they were racing, tire width, what kind of track, length, banking, and what kind of division. And off the top of his head, he would say what kind of cam they needed or what kind of shock or something along those lines. I mean, he was a brilliant, brilliant man. Another story, which this kind of ties in with Dale Jarrett. When they first hired Dale Jarrett at the time, DJ was driving for Joe Gibbs Racing, which was not the powerhouse team that it is today. And he was under contract with them, and the story goes, Ernie Irvin had gotten hurt. They needed a driver, so he went to Dale Jarrett. And the comment, supposedly, that Robert Yates made to Joe Gibbs was, yes, he's under contract, but anyone can write a contract. A six-year-old can write a contract. Why else would God have made money?
That is funny. I like that one. I'm going to have to use that sometime. Now, Chris, you're an observer of racing for years and years and a keen historian. So you have some thoughts on Robert Yates as well?
He stayed with Ernie Irvin after the situation that he went through, and I thought that was very classy of him to, you know, not just, you know, toss him out like that, to have him say, you know what, hey, when you get better, you're going to have a car here waiting for you. I thought it was really nice on his part, really. And he obviously knew what it was like to suffer through tragedy in racing, having to deal with everything with Davey Allison after he passed away. So he didn't have the easiest time, but, you know, he was able to – the fact that he knew he got into the Hall of Fame, I think, means a lot to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and it means a lot to the people that work for him too, because, you know, he was one of the most popular people in the garage area. Everybody that I've ever known that worked for Robert over the years had said it was one of the greatest places they'd ever worked in their careers. So that speaks volumes.
That does speak volumes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, But, you know, Robert Yates, we'll miss him. I'm looking forward to the enshrinement ceremony later. I'm sure there'll be lots of fine tributes to him. Shame he couldn't be there to accept it. But, you know, like to your point, he knew that he had achieved that. So, and well-deserved as well. So, but we did have a race at the Monster Mile. Mr. Kyle Busch taking another win on the season, stamping his name on this chase here. It was an elimination round. There were four drivers that will not be in the playoffs. I'm sorry, I called it a chase. Not be in the playoffs, and we'll get into that in a minute. But Chase Elliott was really coming on strong. Looked like he was heading towards his first win. Looked to be like he got bottled up behind Ryan Newman, who was also fighting to keep his playoff spot. Some folks accuse Ryan of blocking. If you ask me, you know, Ryan had every right to defend that position, stay in the lead lap, you know, especially with the history of late yellows and green-white checkers. But Kyle Busch was able to get around, you know, steal the win from Chase. But, you know, Chase held on for second. He's still alive in the playoffs. So, Seth, tell me you called all four that were eliminated.
Last week on the podcast, yeah.
Yes. So who wants to chime in first on this Dover race?
Well, let me say something in Ryan Newman's defense.
Yes, sir.
Chase Elliott never really got to Ryan's back bumper during that little thing until the last lap, and that was when Kyle was already beside him. Ryan didn't have to pull over for anybody. He's racing as hard as he can to stay on the lead lap because anything can happen. Caution can come out with one lap to go. Green, white, checkered. He comes around, gets himself in a better position to pass other cars on that lead lap, and all he needed to do was pass two cars, and you know, and then he's in the chase, and Ricky Stenhouse is not. So basically, Ryan Newman didn't do anything wrong, and I never thought that Chase actually got close enough to his back bumper to really to where it really affected Chase. Chase's tires were going away, and that's the reason that that Kyle Busch was catching him at such a great rate. Kyle Busch came from 4 seconds down after the last set of green flag pit stops cycled out. He was 4 seconds behind and was able to chase down. No pun intended, but. It made for an exciting finish. And, you know, you hate to see Chase lose another one that way. I mean, this is probably one in a series of heartbreaking finishes that he's had over the last 2 years. But, you know, the kid's got a lot of talent. He's going to learn how to win. Kyle Larson kind of fought through the same kind of thing. He had a bunch of runner-up finishes and lost some races that people thought probably he should have won. So Chase has nothing to be ashamed of and nothing to hang his head about. He gave it all he could and drove the wheels off that number 24. It just so happened that Kyle Busch, you know, circumstances worked in his favor, and he was able to catch him with a lap to go and pass him for the win.
And again, you know, guys like Kyle Busch and then also Ryan Newman have a ton more miles on the track than young Mr. Elliott does too, you know, and when you talk about knowing how to save your tires and whatnot and being there in position to win, that's all stuff Chase has yet to learn, that these other guys have, you know, learned a lot of lessons the hard way as well, you know, so, but again, great job to the 18 team, you know, they are peaking at the right moment.
And I tell you, it was a compelling race because after that last green flag, after the field cycled through the last round of green flag stops, it was a very compelling race for the end because you had both Ryan Newman and Austin Dillon still in contention racing Ricky Stenhouse for that last transfer spot in the playoffs. Anything could have happened. A caution could have come out and changed the whole complexion. And that's why they all ran so hard. And you know, neither of those three cars that I just mentioned had really good days. So they were really, they were doing the best they could with what they had that day. But it was kind of edge of your seat a little bit to see how it was going to play out. And then with the excitement up front with Kyle Busch cutting into Chase's lead there, it really got your attention those last 50 or 60 laps of the race.
Yeah, it sure did. Now, Richard, you work with Gray there, and with Ryan Newman and with Austin Dillon, and so I know you wanted to jump in and give us your two cents on this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with sort of Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch there as well. I mean, people, looking to blame Ryan for Chase not winning that race. What cost Chase Elliott that race was the fact that he lost a 5.5 second lead in that last stint of the race. You know, Newman didn't do anything to cause that to happen. It was just, Kyle Busch just drove him down and passed him. You're looking for excuses. I mean, at some point, not wanting to be hard on the kid, at some point people are going to start asking questions about his ability to close out in these situations. He's probably, over the last 2 years, had one of the fastest cars yet to win a race. And, he's got to get the job done. Seth just put up on a little chat message here, 5 runners up. It's, is it something mental there? Is he not being able to close out? Are people close to that Hendrick organization trying to look for excuses to sort of pad his ego a little bit? Or, I think he's got to start closing these races out soon. Otherwise, people, I think questions are going to start to be asked about him.
Is it the anti-Kevin Harvick?
They call Harvick the closer. But, we questioned Kyle Larson, too, because in Kyle's first couple of years in really competitive cars, he had pretty much the same thing happen to him. He was in contention to win several races, and he would scrub the fence or something and give up the lead and ultimately lose the race. So I think it's part
of... But don't you think with Larson, though, you watched Larson and... there was something about him, the way he drives, that sort of on the edge, almost like and I know it's a completely different, but almost like the Gilles Villeneuve sort of getting the car sideways, running the high line, doing something a little different. Whereas Chase just seems to do like, 9 things out of 10 right that you have to do to win the race. And it's that last thing that he just, whether it's the team, whether it's, whether it's the team not being used to have to go that far, because with Jeff Gordon, he did everything for them. And I'm not questioning the team per se. I'm just saying, maybe they need to coach him a little bit better and encourage him a little bit more, rather than relying on a driver to do everything for him, where, maybe Chase doesn't have that experience to have that ruthless streak in him.
And it could, and that very well could be, but I tell you, I think once he crosses that threshold and gets that first win, much like Kyle Larson, the second and third wins will come easier to him. I think some of it's confidence, and he's just got to learn to win. And much like a lot of the other drivers that have come through the ranks of Ed. And it's frustrating for him, it's frustrating for his team, and frustrating for his fans. But I think, he's proven he's got the ability to drive the race car and drive it fast and drive well. And I think it's just a matter of time that he'll eventually get that first win, and then the subsequent wins will come easier for him.
Did I hear rightly on the TV coverage that his dad wasn't at the race last weekend or stopped going? Or
they were on vacation.
They were on vacation in Nantucket.
Okay.
Yep.
I thought we were going to get a Lewis Hamilton and the Anthony Hamilton situation cropping up again there.
But, I tell you, it was a pretty good race. I think the playoff scenario added a lot of interest to the race. Of course, the segment thing was pretty good too. I think we saw Kyle Larson win a segment. Who else won the segment there? I can't remember who won the other.
Keselowski
won a segment. It just seemed, we had different cars kind of take command of each segment and go on for the win. The 78 ran good again this weekend, but didn't quite have the car that we thought he would. But he still ended up with a very, very good finish. and he's going in. He's going to advance into the next round of the playoffs. You know, as the point leader. So pretty good. And of course, Kyle Busch. What can you say about him? He's coming on at the right time. He's won two of the first three playoff races, and he's advancing with a whole lot of momentum. And I believe, and Seth can correct me if I'm wrong, but we're going to Charlotte next week for the race, and I believe Kyle Busch has never won a cup race there. Am I correct there?
He won the All-Star race earlier this year, but he's never won a points-paying race at Charlotte.
That's one of the few he hasn't won at,
yeah.
So now Seth, since you called the four guys that were out, let's go ahead and go down the list. I'll let you announce the drivers that are out of the playoffs. Even though most of our listeners know by now,
Kurt Busch, who was the furthest out to begin with, Kasey Kahne, Austin Dillon, who entered Dover tied with Stenhouse, and by 2 points, Ryan Newman. And a thought on Ryan Newman and Stenhouse, real quick. Neither of them until Dover had scored any points in the playoffs in any of the stages.
And neither had Austin Dillon.
Jeffrey Earnhardt's crash during the first round of green flag pit stops changed the entire complexion of the race between Newman, Dillon, and Stenhouse. Stenhouse was one of the five drivers who had not yet pitted. He moved from about 22nd or so in the right order to fourth, finished that stage in, fourth or fifth. It was something around there.
Fourth place because he gained seven. He garnered seven points.
And if it wasn't for those 7 points, Newman would be in the next round and not Stenhouse.
Stenhouse definitely caught a lucky break there. And if you look at the next couple of rounds here, you know, Talladega's coming up, and we know how strong he's been on the restrictor plate tracks this year with 2 wins. So, you know, I'd like to see how deep Stenhouse goes into this thing, but I honestly don't see him in the final four.
Well, like you said, with Talladega coming up and the way they've been at Talladega, I wouldn't be surprised to see him go on to the next round. Going to the final four, he would need a lot of help, in my opinion. Yeah. Haven't had consistency.
If he can pull off what he's done at the last two restrictor plate races, he'll definitely make it to the round of eight.
Oh, absolutely.
But you know, the thing about it is, and you know, everybody looks at things and tries to Monday morning quarterback. And if the caution hadn't come out here, there, and everywhere, but you know, I thought they explained it pretty well in the race. There were 29 races prior to this was the 29th race. 28 races prior to what transpired at Dover this weekend. You know, teams had opportunities and chances to gain playoff points along the way by you know, getting stage top tens. So I mean, you can't really let it fall onto one race. Obviously, it came down to one race for a thing, but you think about you think back to the other 28 races when there was opportunities to gain points there too. So that's one of the things that all the teams that didn't make it are going to sit back and look at the missed opportunities all along the way.
Absolutely, yeah. And even if you look at like a guy like Brad Keselowski, right, who hasn't won since back in the spring. Spring Martinsville race, I believe, was his last win, but he's won several stages and he's been up there at the top near the stages there, and just, you know, collecting those playoff points that's kept him. I mean, he was locked in before this race started without having won a race in a while. So, you know, good job for playing the game as it's supposed to be played. And Martin Truex with, you know, more stage wins than anybody in the history of NASCAR, you know, since the first year they had it. You know, Truex, you know, could go through a whole round without a win and still probably stay atop the points.
Probably could. Because you're gonna have three people are gonna go in on by virtue of winning a race, and there's always gonna be the guys that follow suit in points too. So, you know, that's the thing to do. It's rewarding consistency again. in during each of these stages. If you can't win, you need to finish as close as you can to the front.
Now, I want to bring Aaron into this conversation here, since you're the new guy on the panel, and you've just been kind of sitting there being quiet. Joey's been quiet too, and that kind of scares me. But we'll hold off on Joey till later. But now, Aaron, you covered quite a lot of NASCAR. I believe that you've covered 15 races so far this year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've had a sleepless night or two traveling to the track this year.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me some of your thoughts, on this first elimination round of the first playoff system, as we call it now. What are your takeaways from Dover?
Well, one thing I'll kind of touch back on, Seth had mentioned how a lucky caution was what gave Stenhouse more or less the ability to sneak by on points. Well, banking off that, I think the very thing you're talking about there is the same reason you can't blame Ryan Newman at all for doing what he was doing at the end of the race, because he's in a similar position where one caution at the right time could have turned everything around for him.
Absolutely, yes.
He needed,
he was racing as hard as he could.
Exactly. He needed, 2 points? And, I mean, we can also, I think we would all admit, Newman's not one to just always let people by either. He's notorious. He races hard, and he fights for every inch. That's his driving style. So even just knowing Newman in general as a style, I wouldn't expect him to move. But with everything on the line, you really, sure. I mean, that's a tough ask. But going further beyond all that, I look at the Chase Elliott and the Kyle Busch stories, and there's two things that kind of evolve from that for me. One is that obviously Chase's his heartbreak, I guess, continues. He keeps coming so close. He's been the bridesmaid many times, but not quite the bride. But he keeps getting a little closer each time, and he's there and learning. And every time he's in that position, he learns something that he can remember next time. I think where he was at this time, if I were in his shoes, and that's easy for a rider in Indiana to say, but I probably would have tried to maybe move up the track. Kyle was running a higher line, and he was trapped behind cars that were on the inside. Even if you're just blocking Kyle's line in the last few laps, it might give you a shot. I was kind of surprised to see he didn't do that. But I think if you loop back to earlier in the weekend with the Truck Series race, we saw another driver who'd been struggling through a winless streak with Ben Rhodes deliver a strong win. So we've seen just this weekend that no matter how far down, how many bad breaks you get, it can happen. So I'm not too worried about Chase. I think he'll be fine. He's still in the playoffs. And on the complete opposite end of that, you look at Kyle Busch. People are forgetting now, he's won back-to-back races. Before this year, he had won one playoff race. It was Homestead in 2015. It was the one that counted.
Yeah, he won the right one.
Yeah, he'd won the one that he needed to win, but he had never won a playoff race outside of that going into this. So for him to go through this first round and rattle off two wins, I think if I'm the rest of the field, and that even includes Truex, that's scary to me.
Yeah,
that's a team.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that is a team that is firing on all cylinders. That's a driver who looks arguably more comfortable than I think he's ever looked inside the car. And that is a manufacturer that is just, quite frankly, absolutely dominant right now. I mean, that is the trifecta and a perfect package for them right now. And even if I'm Truex looking at Busch right now, I'm a little scared, because if he's looking like that when they get to Homestead at the end of the year, that's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, and they, like I mentioned, they're coming back to Charlotte this weekend. Kyle's never won a points race there, and if you go back, he had a really tough second place finish back in May. Got nipped by Austin Dillon on a fuel economy run there at the end, and I think too that he's going back to Charlotte looking for a little bit of revenge.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The interesting thing for me with Busch this year is that whenever it seems like there's a young driver trying to win a race, they have to get by Busch to do it. You had Dillon with the fuel mileage actually beating him. You had Stenhouse, who had to pass Busch during a green-white checkered or overtime to get his first win at Talladega. Busch held off Eric Jones at Bristol, and now he's worked his way around Chase Elliott again. He's kind of like the villain for these young kids that are trying to score that critical first win.
Yeah, but, what a win it is for these young kids when they can get around him, because you're beating the best. So that's a feather in their cap when they can get it done.
Yes, it is.
All right, now, Seth, you're talking about Ben Rhodes of Kansas, go ahead, fill us with your random thought.
Just going way back, following up on Aaron's thought, back at Kansas in the truck race, Kyle Busch was battling with Ben Rhodes, was having trouble passing Ben Rhodes. Rhodes hit some sort of debris and it busted his radiator, giving Kyle Busch the win. Mm-hmm. So you could argue not only is he the villain for the young drivers in the Cup Series, but also in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series as well.
Well, yeah, when you count up the amount of truck and Xfinity wins Kyle has, yeah, he's coming up on 100. He said once he hits 100, he'll go ahead and just stick to Cup. But you know, until then, it's not a comforting thought for these other guys. But at the same time, you know, the experience they gain racing against a guy like Kyle Busch, you know, and people like to malign Kyle Busch, but you can't deny his talent behind the wheel. You know, absolutely. The man is a wheel man, and he does well. And if you, as an Xfinity guy, right, trying to learn your racecraft, get to follow Kyle Busch for 100 laps, you're going to learn something.
You know, Kyle Busch just might be the most talented of his generation in NASCAR right now.
I will not disagree with
you. And I'm sorry, Frank, but I actually have to disagree with you as far as learning from Kyle Busch by being behind him. Some drivers, yes. But others, depending on the equipment, that's far from the truth. Jeremy Clements, after he won at Road America, when he was in the media center for his availability at Darlington, which he actually had to find because he's never been there before.
That's funny.
He was asked the question about Cup drivers in the Xfinity Series, what he's learned from them. And his quote was, "Not a damn thing when they're blowing by me 20 to 30 miles per hour faster than I am."
Well, that's Jeremy Clements now. So,
and let me bring up one thing too, just to kind of talk about. We talked about guys, you know, having to go through this spell of heartbreak before they ever win. Back in the 80s, a guy named Harry Gant was famous for second place finishes, and he was always called, you know, the bridesmaid and never the bride. And Harry Gant endured a similar run that of course Chase Elliott has gone through, and we spoke about Kyle Larson going through the same thing. And we all know, if you know anything about the history of NASCAR, how Harry Gant got out of that, and once he started winning, he won with some regularity for the rest of his career. So yeah, it seems like some drivers are always caught in that that thing. Always, never quite can get over the hump to get that first win, but once they do, they seem to take off from that. So that's just a little bit of history there.
And whenever I think of Harry Gant, I think about that run he had, and I want to say it was 93.
September and October,
he won. And I remember I was at Martinsville when he wrecked, and they said, well, Harry Gant's streak is going to end here. But wouldn't you know it, that he took that busted up car
race in September that year.
Yep, that was a great run for Harry Gant.
1991.
Was it? Yep. Oh God, was that early, huh?
91.
I guess Joey's right. I'm old. So. So let's talk a little bit about the Xfinity and the trucks races. Xfinity was on hand at Dover, correct? And the trucks were standalone and in Vegas, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so let's start off with the Xfinity report there, Seth. Aaron, if you want to jump in and help Seth out with the Xfinity truck report, go ahead.
Well, the Xfinity series started off interesting in practice, when Daniel Hemric lost some weight on pit road, some tungsten, because the bolt was left loose. Richard, am I correct?
I believe that was the case, yes.
And as a result, his crew chief, Danny Stockman, his car chief, Clint Almquist, I may be mispronouncing his name, and his race engineer, Luke Mason, have been suspended from all NASCAR Series Championship points events through November 14th, which I believe would only leave Homestead for them to come back for.
Seth, was there any monetary fine?
No monetary point fine.
Okay. Just to clarify that.
After that, it kind of was a rough start for the Xfinity Series. Brandon Jones spun and got nailed by Jeff Green. Then you had Reed Sorensen blow his engine on a restart. And then on the next restart, one of Carl Long's cars was put into the wall.
That was a big hit.
That was.
If you see it from like the cameras, the camera rotates around the car, and you think, oh yeah, that was enough. But if they showed a camera angle from turn three, looking back down the back stretch, and he hit that wall hard.
Yeah, I want to say it was Chad Fincham in that car. And after that, it was a fairly clean green flag race. Ryan Blaney, to a certain point, ran away with it. Justin Allgaier was quoted as saying he wasn't racing Blaney, he was racing the 22 car. But Blaney, after the race, with the checkered flag, he pointed out to a fan, a young fan, had to be about 10, 12 years old, decked out in Kyle Larson gear, and handed the fan the race-winning checkered flag. And officials whisked the fan and his family away to Victory Lane for the celebration. And by that time, his Target hat had become a Wood Brothers 21 hat. So that was a pretty nice story. Then over in the Truck Series, it also had a rough start. On the start, one truck just couldn't even get fired up, Todd Peck in the 63. And Myatt Snyder got in a chain reaction crash, spun into the inside wall. Neither of them completed a lap. Later in the race, after the first stage, Johnny Sauer missed a gear, got spun, got clobbered by Stuart Friesen, one of the GMS-aligned trucks, GMS is who Sauer drives for, got clipped by Kaz Grala, his other teammate, and Justin Haley, his other teammate, got rammed in the back and it broke part of the truck bed. So all four GMS or GMS-affiliated trucks were either wiped out or badly damaged in that one wreck. Not often an entire team gets wiped out in one wreck. And then afterwards, it was just a very hard-fought battle between Christopher Bell and Ben Rhodes, especially since it came down to a final restart when Austin Lane self blew a tire, taking out Travis Pastrana, who was making his return for the first time in 2 or 3 years. And Ben Rhodes was somehow able to hold off Ben Rhodes was able to hold off Christopher Bell.
Great weekend of racing for the Xfinity Truck guys, or it sounded like a rough weekend of racing for everybody. So they're involved in their chase as well. So NASCAR, we're off to Charlotte next, and this will be the last fall race in Charlotte on the oval, as next year this race will be on the road course. Correct? That's what they say. Yeah. So with that in mind, we can go around the table, make some picks for Charlotte. I always get to pick last, so I'm going to pick first this week and take Truex before.
Come on.
Oh, look, usually I pick last, and leave me with Danica. So I'm going to go ahead and take Truex because he runs pretty strong at Charlotte, and I'll let the six of you pick who's ever left. Aaron, you get second pick.
All right. Well, you see, the way Cup's been going for the last couple of months, there's about one of four cars max you pick most weekends, so I'm going to stay smart and stay in my wheelhouse there. I am going to say Kyle Busch gets his first points paying win.
All right. Good. Yep. Be good for Kyle to do that. He's fully capable of it, too. Christopher DeHardy, you've been kind of quiet over there. Who do you like for Charlotte?
I'll take Brad Keselowski.
All right. Gray, you're going to be next. Gray, who do you like for Charlotte?
I'm going to have to agree with Aaron that that Kyle Busch is, it would be my pick to win it, but he's picked him, so I'm gonna say let's go with a different somebody, a spoiler, if you will. Jamie McMurray, that's one of his good tracks coming next two races coming up are good tracks for Jamie as well, Charlotte and Talladega. I'm gonna say Jamie gets off the snide there and picks up a win.
Yes, that's a good bet for Vegas there, man. The odds are good there if you win. So Richard Uden
After slating him earlier, I'm going to go with Chase Elliott.
Okay, all right. Now, Aaron, you were trying to make a comment there.
Well, I was going to say that's a throwback pick on Jamie McMurray. Wasn't Charlotte the side of his first win back when he was subbing for Sterling Marlin?
It was.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah.
It was indeed. And he's run well there in several races of late. That's why I'm going to pick him. And you know, talking about odds, he'll probably be a good pick for someone that's going to play Vegas odds, because he'll probably be, I would say, anywhere around anywhere between 15 and 20 to 1.
Ah, yeah, and that team is strong. That team is strong this year. And, you know, now, Joey, who are you liking for Charlotte?
I mean, can we just keep the theme with Toyota drivers? That seems to be – that's what I did last time for New Hampshire. Man, that's tough. I'll go Matt Kenseth.
That's a good pick, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kenseth has been shut out of victory lane for a while. He's due for a win, yeah. So, and now, speaking of Toyota teams, okay?
Do I get a pick?
No, you live in Charlotte. You're gonna be at the race. A T-shirt and a program. So, no, Seth, who do you like? Because I was gonna go somewhere that's gonna go back to you, but go ahead.
Okay,
you get Erik Jones.
Well, I was going to pick Chase Elliott, but Richard picked him. Just one side note on that. If Chase Elliott wins, he would become the first driver not named Jeff Gordon to win in the 24 car in the Cup Series.
He's only got a few races left to do that as well, hasn't he?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with the 42 instead, Kyle Larson.
Another very good pick. So now, speaking of the Toyota teams, right? I had read a tidbit, and I don't know how reliable it was, but I'm going to throw it to you guys that that were close to the sport of NASCAR, that the 77 team with Furniture Row had sold their charter to the 77 car. Now, is that true? And if they did?
They did.
So do we know who they sold it to, or is that still?
Barney Visser has not said. He said he contractually it's been contracted out to a team that's needs one, that he just won't run a placeholder, but he hasn't said who, and he said he won't until after the season.
So who's the smart money on? Who do we kind of speculate that might be?
And probably Richard, Penske's third car.
Penske's third car, okay, yeah. All right, Gray, Richard, you hearing the same kind of thing, or?
Yeah, I must admit I haven't heard anything on that one.
I haven't heard anything on it. Barney Visser said that, just to echo what Seth said, Barney Visser said that everything had been done and agreed upon, and they would not announce it until a later date.
Yeah, but
it'd be interesting to see. I mean, you know, would there be the possibility that you have an alliance team to an alliance team in a way? Obviously, with Furniture Row having their alliance with Toyota, if you know, obviously you've got a lot of guys over there in Denver working on that 77, to suddenly, you know, there've been a lot of guys have moved out there for 1 year. It's pretty rough on them if they've suddenly got to move back or find a different job. So I wonder if there's a situation where there is another team that's maybe a one car team that'd be, you know, based out of that sort of situation.
Could be. You know, you just never know. And we'll probably have to wait till Homestead, you know, media day at Homestead to find out a lot of answers to a lot of these questions.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all we can do is speculate. would never know the real answer until it comes out. Go ahead, Seth.
Just one small note, because of something Joey said. If the Wood Brothers go on and win the championship, technically speaking, the team owner would actually be Go Fast Racing, because that's who they're leasing the charter from.
Right, and he's going to benefit either way, because that charter, that I don't know if they won't have that charter. That charter reverts back, so he'll get the benefit, get all the benefits of wherever that 21 finishes in the final payout.
Joey says, like, playoff points is too confusing to care.
Yeah, that's not exactly what Joey said, but that's what I can say on the air. When you start talking about all that stuff, the water gets very muddy. You're correct.
Yes, it does. So before we move on and talk about this interesting Formula One weekend that we had out in Malaysia, any other NASCAR stories you're missing? I know we're taping Tuesday this week, so we don't have the penalty report that we usually have when we tape on Wednesday. So it's funny that, you know, by the time our show airs on Thursday, there could be something.
The only thing I can think of, I think Chevrolet will unveil their 2018 Cup ride, which will be the Camaro.
They already unveiled it earlier.
Hendrick's going to unveil theirs.
And I'll be at that event.
Right. Hendrick's going to unveil their 2018 ride, yeah. And by the way, that's a sharp-looking race car. It really is.
It's a very nice car, yeah, because it's very similar to the one they're using in Xfinity right now, yeah.
It's quite different, because this particular car, it has a all new front end, and it will run it's a stamped steel body, whereas the Xfinity car is more of the old-style formed body. Looks more of a, has more of the jelly bean appearance, you know, on the fenders and door skins. This particular car is really sharp because it has the neat character lines for the rear fenders and front rear fenders and the doors. So yeah, it's going to be a really, really nice looking race car.
Can't wait to see it on the track next year. So, so anyway, Formula One is in Malaysia. Max Verstappen took the second win of his career. Joey, you watched the race in earnest, I know. I'm gonna let you go ahead and start off our Formula One segment with your race report.
Yeah, so we all kind of anticipated Ferrari was going to have a strong weekend based on what we saw in Friday practice and based off what we saw in final practice. But in between practice and qualifying, some issues hit Sebastian Vettel's car. Essentially, the power unit had an issue, and they had to swap out parts, and they didn't actually get a chance to go and run Q1, so he didn't get a chance to qualify, had to start last. Lewis Hamilton, who didn't have pace the entire weekend, up to that point, ended up getting the pole, and Kimi Raikkonen, Vettel's teammate, ended up second. The only Ferrari to actually start in the top 15, which is kind of staggering and a little scary to think that Haas didn't quite have that pace. But going into the race, leading up to the race, you had Hamilton on pole, but leading up, you had Raikkonen actually have a power unit issue of his own and actually had to start, not even start the race, actually came off the grid from P2, had to retire, and what we ended up having was a get away from Hamilton. So you're looking ahead, you saw Verstappen make a nice pass on Hamilton for the lead, then checks out 6 seconds, goodbye. But the more enticing fights were midfield anyway, with Vettel trying to come up through the field. He went from all the way up to, what was it, Richard, like 12th by the end of the first lap, right behind Fernando?
It was another, you know, electrifying start. And I think after what happened in Singapore, probably some of those guys slightly further back down the grid were just getting out of his way.
Yeah, I mean, what was astonishing about this whole deal is Bottas had a good start too and ended up to P3 and then got past Ricciardo there, and Ricciardo had to fight back, and we saw some really good side-by-side between those two. And I was really impressed, though, and I know we talked about it off the air, I was really impressed with Stoffel Van Dorn, Fernando's teammate, who came up from I think, seventh or so on the grid up to fifth, only to fall back down to seventh by the end of the race. But that McLaren, ironically, now that the announcement's been made, Honda has started to really show pure pace, oddly enough, of all places at Malaysia. It was the last Malaysian Grand Prix. The pass that Verstappen made on Hamilton was sealed the deal, is what Frank alluded to, for the second win. Hamilton ended up finishing second. Ricciardo managed to hold off Vettel late in the stages for third. Really thought that those super softs were going to play to his strengths there in the closing bit. Had a look going into turn one. Ricciardo closed the door, and that was all she wrote. But in the cool-down laps, it's not uncommon for Formula One drivers to go and try to pick up extra rubber, extra clag going off of in the corners. And in doing so, getting next to Mr. Lance Stroll, Lance didn't see him. Maybe Vettel pushed it a little bit too much trying to get next to him, and those two collided. And Pascal Wehrlein had to pick Sebastian Vettel up to go back to the garage. So, Richard,
you know, but it wasn't just that. It wasn't just a tap. The damage, the damage to Vettel's car was, you know, the tires sticking up in the air, and they're talking like he may need a gearbox change and incur more grid penalties next week. Well,
I saw today where he's not going to have to go.
Yeah.
Forego the gearbox change.
Well, that's
if you went to MotorsportsTribune.com, Frank, you'd be able to see that was indeed the case.
But that's where I got it from.
Boom. So, you like that pitch? Had to do that.
That's fine. No, I was talking about the early speculation. You didn't let me finish. So I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce deserves this award.
I'll tell you what's interesting, Kanye West,
you're right.
There's still the potential of a points fine coming. He's already 34 points back in this championship fight. And when you look at this, A, he took the steering wheel with him. Obviously, you're going to want to do that. You don't want other teams to get a chance to look at it. But he also hitched a ride when the medical car was right behind him back to the garage, both of which could levy a fine and a potential penalty hit. So to you, Richard, I'll ask, do you really think that's coming? Because we saw a pretty hefty fine with Mark Webber doing that some years ago. And hey, we didn't see a points hit, though, for that.
No, I think, the only issue you could have now is with the new sort of penalty system they have with driver points. I know Vettel got a number of points post the shenanigans in Azerbaijan, where he drove into Lewis. I think he had some points on his license before then, but I'm not sure if they've lapsed yet because they stay on your license for 12 months. So if they do decide to impose, there's another 6 points on his license, then he would miss a race. I don't think they would issue a points penalty because I think that's too manipulating the championship and manipulating the results at that end. And I think they'd want to try and avoid that as much as possible. But I mean, and again, it's a bit like, you know, we have the debate in NASCAR about them, like, you know, the drivers celebrating post race. You know, people would love to have seen Vettel driving around on the back of a car. You know, it harks back to the days of Senna and Mansell back at Silverstone in the early 90s. I'd be very, very surprised if they did a points penalty. I think that would be a little bit excessive.
Maybe they'll put him in his car and make him sit at the end of pit road while they have practice.
Yeah, see, the problem with
you could do that.
If that's a Formula One car, you've got to have another 20 guys around it just to get the thing to move.
I tell you what's interesting about this, though, is like, and I know you and I at certain points were a little critical because of Hungary, not maybe letting Kimi go whenever they were 1-2 and Kimi had the pace, and then Hamilton was just on full attack mode, and he was told, you have to hold Lewis Hamilton back, Kimi. And he had to do that. And then Monaco, pitting Kimi early versus and giving Vettel that clean track. But when you really look at this, now hindsight being 2020, that was one of probably the most valuable things that could have happened for Vettel to still be in contention for this title. Because without that, he's sitting P3 in this championship, and Bottas is 50 points back still. So if Ferrari's going to do something, it definitely has to start at Suzuka. Their last update happened in Malaysia. This power unit that Vettel has is supposed to last him all the way to the end of the season. So that's important to note, without a grid penalty being present if they do decide to interchange anything. So I expect Ferrari to be very, very strong. And Vettel's got 4 wins in Japan. So,
yeah.
I don't see anybody else winning this weekend, if I'm being honest. I think Hamilton could go and finish second again. And if Vettel goes and can string together 2 or 3 wins, which is very Vettel-like to do, even if Hamilton gets second, we're right back in the thick of this thing by the time we get to Brazil and Abu Dhabi.
And it's interesting. You look at the last 2 races, and especially Singapore, that was supposed to be, you know, that and Monaco, they're the 2, like, off weekends for the Mercedes team. They come out there with a win and a third place for Hamilton and Bottas. Then Malaysia's not the same. You know, that's an average track, for want of a better word. You know, it's not a really high downforce track like Singapore. It's not a speed track like Spa or Monza. So you think, okay, it's a mix, and you expect Mercedes again to be the dominant car that race, but they just weren't. They were far from it. I mean, you'd say that Ferrari easily had the pace on them, and probably Red Bull as well, as you saw with Max Verstappen. So there's, you know, chances are, you know, they're not going to get any changes in place for this weekend, with them being a flyaway race. So there's probably not going to be any new parts coming onto that Mercedes car, apart from the planned parts that are going to be track specific. And there'll be some concerns in that camp as to if both Ferrari and Red Bull get their act together over the course of a weekend and put string everything together like they're supposed to, they're going to be pretty tough to beat. And then, you know, if Hamilton's sort of fighting for the scraps in sort of third, fourth, fifth sort of thing, that lead that he's got over Vettel will come down really quickly. So they've certainly dodged the danger that, that could have been coming from Ferrari the last couple of weeks, but they can't keep that going for the next 5. And there's no track in there that you think is, a power circuit that's a Mercedes banker.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you what's critical when I look back at Malaysia was they asked Sky Sports and Baskin Hamilton what made the difference on Saturday post-qualifying, and he said that they talked after Friday practice, and they elected to keep Bottas in kind of a similar package to what they were running, and Hamilton decided to take on a new package. So that attributed a lot, especially because of Park Ferme rules, that they couldn't touch Bottas' car after that. That's why he ended up finishing 5th in that race. But you would expect that they're going to lean those setups more toward what Hamilton ran for the next, especially in Japan, because there is some contrast with elevation changes, the long straight, that lovely double apex that they've got, the right-hander. So
Degner's. Degner 1 and 2. Yeah, awesome corners those are, yeah.
And now, so I look at this as a very much a problem, like you alluded to, being flyaway races. I could see this becoming something that continues at the USGP at Mexico. Maybe Red Bull should be the dominant car in Brazil if everything stays true to form, what we saw with Malaysia.
Yeah, but you look at Japan again. You know, you've got those S's, you've got the Degners, you've got the Spoon curve. You know, there's some pretty high aero load corners there, and you've got 130R coming off that back off the bridge. That they're going to be strong, and I believe I'm right in saying, and I may be wrong here, that actually Mercedes took an aero upgrade to Malaysia, and actually Hamilton went back to the old aero spec, and Bottas stayed with the updated aero spec. And it obviously just didn't click for Bottas or whatever, you know, for whatever reason. And again, it didn't really click for Hamilton in race trim, in Q trim, maybe so, but certainly not in the race. And he was lucky. I mean, if Vettel and Raikkonen had been where they should have been, you know, he wouldn't have been on the podium.
Now, that was a hell of a lap, too, in qualifying, though, that Hamilton. And I mean, Hamilton and Raikkonen came. I know we make fun of Formula One all the time because, he won by 6 seconds. But the reality is, in qualifying on GoFast Day, there was a half a tenth separating first and second. I mean, it was a hell of a show that Hamilton and Raikkonen put on in Q3.
I mean, the last few weeks, I think qualifying at Singapore, the qualifying for Singapore was intense. It's qualifying has probably been the best part of the weekend for the last few weeks.
What do you got, Aaron?
Well, I just wanted to point something else out that goes along with this championship battle, and that's with Lewis. He has not had a single DNF or a finish outside of the points this year, and he's actually up to 20 consecutive races in the points, which is his longest personal streak and fifth all-time for F1. So I think really that one shunt for Vettel has been kind of the difference in this battle, and we're just kind of waiting to see if Mercedes has that same kind of issue with Hamilton like he had last year against Rosberg.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, he's been very fortunate and hadn't had that DNF. And you think if he has some misfortune in the next couple of three races, then we're right back, you know, right back knotted up going into the final three events.
I mean, Hamilton has shown that he could be the most dominant driver to not win a championship, period. And, I mean, that said, there's still a lot to play for with five rounds left. So, at this point, I would even say that from Ricardo on forward, I mean, Ricardo is the longest of shots, but I really think that even Bottas currently has a good chance. This isn't a two-way fight by any means, but I tell you, this is kind of alluding off the championship path some. I know I've been very critical of Max Verstappen. He had 7 DNFs and 14 races leading into Malaysia. And frankly, Toro Rosso's Carlos Sainz, who just got the nod to go to Renault, was right on his heels in the championship points. That's a Toro Rosso keeping up with a senior team. I think there was some 7-point difference, 10-point difference between the two entering the weekend. That, of course, is lengthened. It was a feel-good run for Max. It was his birthday weekend. He turned 20. He's no longer that teenage sensation. So a big attaboy to Verstappen, because that was one of the more masterful races he has driven. And we talk about maturity. We talk about him needing to mature to become a championship challenger. Obviously, you've got to go through strife and trying times like these in order to have that.
You know, he kind of reminds me of another young guy when he came into the sport, you know, was signed with a top team despite being young and had 14 DNFs in 16 races, but at 61. And then that guy turned out to be okay. His name was Villeneuve, Gilles Villeneuve. So, I hate to draw the parallel to from Verstappen to Gilles Villeneuve, but this kid has that fire. He does, and that's what kind of gets him burned more often than not. You know, that plus the Red Bull is not quite the match of the Ferraris and or the Mercedes, but yeah.
I think the biggest thing, and I'll let Richard kind of step in on this because I actually don't know this gentleman's name. FIA certified dude that covers all the parts for all the teams, been suspected of signing with Renault and kind of an under the table kind of situation, and there are a lot of pissed off team principals, to say the least.
I read about that one too. Richard, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. The contracts that obviously the teams have with the FIA and the governing body of the sport are... I don't know what the exact wording is with regards to recruiting technical people from within the FIA. If there is an agreement in there, I'm sure it's a gentleman's agreement. I mean, within all of these teams, obviously based in Europe and within the European Union, you have a right to work. So it's very difficult to enforce a non-compete clause in a contract. And I think probably under the letter of the law and legally, this wouldn't be considered... wouldn't be considered a competitor. I don't know. Obviously, the guy involved sitting in the money seat, really, isn't he? He'll probably end up being paid for not going to work, which could be great. You know, put on an extended gardening.
Living the dream.
Exactly. Fair play to him. But it is a difficult thing, and it is something that, you know, you do have to look at. Obviously, these guys do get pretty exclusive access to You know, the cars, designs, and intellectual property, a lot of these leading teams. And what's not uncommon is for a team to submit a part or a drawing and just turn around and say, you know, look, hey, is this going to be legal? Can I do this? Can I do that? And he's, you know, he's got sort of the pickings of all the best parts. Now, contrary to that, as we've discussed before on this show, it's not a case of just saying, oh, well, Red Bull's got the best front wing and Ferrari's got the best rear wing and, you know, Mercedes has the best diffuser and Williams has the best suspension geometry and putting them all together and, oh, you've got the fastest car out there. It's far, far from it. Everything has to work together. So it'll be interesting to see how that works and how that goes out. I'm sure there'll be one of these things that'll end up being, you know, there'll be some legal battles over it, and he'll probably be put onto some sort of extended gardening leave while all that gets sorted out. But you know, fair play to Renault in a way. They've gone for the jugular, as it were, and they may have pulled it off.
And yeah, that may very well fall into the hands of McLaren next year. May help out you know, Alonso in his quest to be in a winning car once again.
I tell you this, how smart does Nico Hülkenberg look right now? Everybody was questioning that stuff last year. Should he leave Force India? In my opinion, you always go for the factory team, period.
Of course you do. 100%.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the fact that he's got that, and now he's got a legitimate teammate that doesn't run out of talent in a corner and spin every...
That's the wind. It was wind.
Yeah, not sure.
Not personal wind, but, you know, wind on the track.
I mean, you know, if that... You've got the steering wheel, man. That's all I'm saying. Track. But, yeah. You know, having Carlos Sainz there, who, for my money, I would have had in a Red Bull car before Max Verstappen personally. But I look at this thing, and I think that team, with the people they're putting in place... that is going to be a team that this is their first real car this year that they had a chance to build over the off season and formulate. They were messing with Lotus stuff last year. So when you really get a chance to see what this team's going to do, I think it's not very long before they become a real player, and they could be demoting Red Bull in the coming years. But just because there's,
100%, yeah.
I mean, we're going to be looking at odds are Renault, Ferrari, and Mercedes by 2020. I would say
100%.
Yeah, it would be nice to see, you know, three or four teams competing for wins rather than one or two with the odd third one occasionally. You know, if we can get to you know, five different teams winning a race within the same season, that would be, you know, something we haven't seen in Formula One in quite some time.
And just before we sort of get off Malaysia, I just want to mention Pierre Gasly driving his first race for Toro Rosso, replacing Danny Kvyat. I think he proved that he's more than capable. You know, Kvyat, he's just uninspiring, isn't he, really? He's just doesn't have much personality, drives into things, drives into people, complains, moans. He'd actually fit quite well in a NASCAR team, I think. you know, Pierre Gasly, yeah, top drive. And he's even turned around and said that he would forfeit the Super Formula Championship that he's racing in the moment to compete in the USF1B, I guess.
Absolutely,
yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they do keep him in that car, because he, in qualifying, certainly gave Carl Sainz a run for his money. Apparently, I mean, talking about being thrown in the deep end, Malaysia is probably one of the most physically demanding races of the season with the humidity there, and there was rain before the race, so I'm sure that added to the scenario. And he did suffer from back pain and discomfort during the race, so hopefully they can get some of that sorted out for Japan this weekend. And I do fear that it's probably the last we'll see of Mr. Kvyat in Formula One, or at least with Toro Rosso anyway. But he's had his opportunity. He had the big team. He had the Red Bull drive, and just never really did the business.
So it's a cutthroat word. I can think of exactly one good race out of Danny Kvyat, and that was 2 years ago. You know, and since then, yeah, he's squandered that opportunity. And you know, hopefully, Pierre Gasly will make the most of the opportunity. You know, I'd love to see what the young man has to offer. It's always good to see a new name in the sport. So, a couple of other off-track Formula One stuff I wanted to touch on. You know, Force India's Vijay Malia was arrested today again. for laundering money to his Formula One team. So that's kind of like a common thing. But I just don't know, you know, how far that's going to go, if that's going to one day cause that team to just not be on the grid. But he refuses to be extradited to India. You know, and we're talking about $1.2 billion that is owed to somebody. But so there you go. Richard, do you have anything on this?
Yeah, so very, very quickly. Not necessarily on this specific incident, but I know that they're looking at changing the name of the team away from Force India to, I can't remember what the name was mentioned, probably looking at doing this for next year, obviously with the licensing agreement for Formula One, they can't change name mid-season, but...
I remember hearing it too. The name was kind of stupid. I just can't remember what it is.
It's like Force F1 or something. I don't know.
Something weird, yeah.
Obviously, the team principal, I guess, or team manager, CEO, Otmar... Schaffenhauser, I think his surname is. I can never get that spelled right or pronounced right. He was doing an interview with the British TV around about Silverstone race, and they were saying that they're looking to take away from the India branding so they can attract sponsorship from outside of India, and probably because the Indian link to the team will probably be disappearing into some luxurious Indian prison cell anytime soon.
Absolutely, yeah. A couple of other off-track notes. It looks like Robert Kubica's test is back on with Williams after it was reported last week that it was being held up by Papa Stroll. So it looks like both Paul Di Resta and Kubica will get some time in the 2014 chassis to kind of contend for that seat against Massa, who may still be in the frame for that seat. And of course, now Richard, I want to throw this to you. Okay, now Richard, you were born and raised in the United Kingdom. You watched Formula One since you were young, okay, but somehow you've managed to avoid the Lewis Hamilton Kool-Aid and not be enamored by him. So as you're aware, since you're living in North Carolina now, we've got this big flap going on in the States with NFL players kneeling for the national anthem, and then our president even getting involved with the NFL and whatnot, which is way off of our topic and whatnot. But suddenly, Lewis Hamilton, of all people, right, is out there tweeting that perhaps he'll just go ahead and kneel or not stand for the American national anthem when the Formula One circus comes to Austin in November. Richard, I just want to throw this at you because I know you know a lot about Lewis and I'm just going to let you go.
Lewis does know which state Austin's in, doesn't he?
I hope he does. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, probably not the smartest thing to try and, if you're going to pull those antics, to do it in Texas.
What are you trying to say? I'm from Texas.
He could be run out of the country.
That's
within half
an hour.
That's
the
point. That's exactly the point you're trying to make, yeah. So,
you know,
is this just Lewis trying to keep his name in the news? Or do you think he really feels with his cause? The cause becomes so muddled to begin with. Is it about police brutality, or are we now just mad at Donald Trump, you know?
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day...
Yes.
I know Lewis spends a lot of time over here in the States, but he's... Somebody please just shut him up. I mean, he's just... tells you a little bit about his personality from what I understand. For a long time, he had this on-off relationship with Nicole Scherzinger from some pop group or whatever. Trying not to sound like an old man. And he was once asked by one of these lifestyle magazines, what's it like to be dating a celebrity? And that pretty much was the end of their relationship. He wanted to be the celebrity. He wanted to be the one that everybody knew. And he didn't like the fact that this magazine or this lifestyle magazine considered Nicole Scherzinger more of a celebrity than he was. And he was, that did not go down at all well with him. That's his personality. He wants to be the limelight. He wants to be the center of attention. And the really sad thing about it is that Lewis and as a lot of the Formula One drivers do, they do so much good things for so many good causes. You then start to think, well, who is this guy? Is it somebody who, off his own back, goes and does these great charitable events and these great things that you see, you know, so much PR and the like for? Or is he just doing it because he thinks that when he, that's what he needs to do? And then when he actually opens his own mouth and says what he thinks, you just think, oh, for goodness sake, man, shut up. You know, and it, and to a greater extent, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion about what you see going on in the NFL and what you see going. I know it's recently it sort of spilled over into baseball a little bit, but you know, I don't, you know, I don't make comments about my opinion on it or how, where I think it stands or who I think's right or who I think's wrong in this situation, because it's not my thing. You know, I respect the country that I live in now. I love living here. I love the people. And, you know, but to the same extent, you know, I don't have that background, and neither does Lewis. Lewis has no right to get involved.
Yeah, that's my thought.
I mean, if he wanted to kneel for the British anthem or whatever, then fine, do that. But don't come over here and get involved in somebody else's argument, because you're going to make yourself look like an idiot. And unfortunately for Lewis, that comes very easily to him.
Good point.
You know, just, you know, you just really, you know, as much success as he's had, looking at it from a racing perspective, I bet the guys at McLaren are thinking, thank God we got rid of him, because it's just, oh, the PR people there must be just like, you know, you'd almost like, and I don't want to get political here, but you must almost be like Donald Trump's press secretary, waking up in the morning and checking his Twitter feed. You know, you think, oh, what's he said now? And it must be the same with Lewis. Oh, what's he said now? What's he saying? You know, somebody take his phone off him. It's, again, just get on with what you're doing. Get on with your job. Stay out of politics. Stay out of especially other countries' politics. And be done with it.
All right. Epic rant this week brought to you by Richard Eaton Incorporated.
Sorry.
So, oh, that's okay. No, well said, Richard. Joey, you want to chime in?
Not on that. I'm not one to talk politics.
Okay, so
But I do want to kind of allude a little bit to the Red Bull deal with Gasly, as well as a little bit of the Williams deal before we move on. And that's, number one, Gasly is only half a point back to the first place guy in the championship in Super Formula. The last two races are at Suzuka, which happened the same weekend as COTA and Austin, as what Richard alluded to. I don't understand for the life of me why we're not seeing that race as an undercard the same weekend as Formula One, to really help minimize a little bit of that and help maximize some exposure there. But
sorry, if I could just, even if it did, if it was the same weekend, I believe the Formula One rules and regulations say that you can only compete in one series per weekend. So, like, you can't have people taking part in F2 and a Formula 1 race the same weekend, or GP2 and Formula 1 as it used to be. So, even if they were together, I don't think you would have been allowed to drive in both series.
Well, I know, I'm not referring to that necessarily, but just for the sake of keeping things a little bit more jointed together, because by doing that, you could have had Kvyat run all the way up to Japan, let Gasly take the title, and then you've still got Gasly to run the last three rounds. Looking ahead, I know that there's a lot of the Williams situation in Toro Rosso, to me, kind of blends together, because I've heard people say, well, Pascal Wehrlein might be out of a ride over at Sauber, which is very much likely, since they're running the updated Ferrari engines next year. Ferrari's got a big technical partnership kind of involved there, and Pascal Wehrlein's a Mercedes driver. There's really not a big place for Pascal Wehrlein to go next year. Williams isn't going to happen unless he's replacing Lance Stroll, because Williams Martini, from the Williams Martini part of that race team, have said that they need the other person alongside Mr. Lance Stroll to be above 25 years of age to market the team, to market the alcohol side of that sponsorship. So that's why you're looking at that drive either going to Massa again next year, That's why you're looking at Robert Kubica or Paul DiResta, who had a really good job subbing in replacement whenever Massa was ill at Hungary. So when you look at those situations, Wehrlein's out there because, let's be honest, Lance Stroll's dad is footing the hell out of that bill. And that brings me back to Toro Rosso. If they are not going to move, if they're going to completely wipe this lineup clean, you got to think that if Wehrlein doesn't have anywhere to go, that means that Mercedes didn't necessarily uphold a way to fit him in. And barring him returning to DTM, the best place for him to go might be to go ahead and leave as part of that whole Mercedes situation, bet on himself, and come over and let Red Bull offer him an opportunity. And Red Bull doing something that they don't commonly do, which is bring somebody else in from somewhere else. They haven't done that since Vettel at Sauber. So, looking at this whole aspect of how everything kind of comes into play, I really think that we could be looking at, unless it's Kvyat and Gasly, we very well could be seeing Wehrlein take his talents over there to the Italian team. So I know it's a long shot, but where else can Wehrlein really go? Because Mercedes can't really offer him a drive anywhere right now.
I think he's had his opportunity. I've heard too many things from too many people close to him, through his time at Manor and again through Sauber. He may have reasonable pace, but as a driver and as a person and as somebody that you want to work with, and I've never been privy to this, so this is all secondhand information, but he has an attitude about him. He has an air of arrogance. He doesn't want to work with the team. He doesn't want to work with the people involved with the organization, and I think there's a lot of people in the know around him at like some Mercedes and some of the other teams that are, he's almost burnt his bridges a little bit, and he's sort of created that we don't really want to work with you, buddy. Sorry.
I'll say this though, to me he sounds like a poor man's Lewis Hamilton, just the German version, but that still levels off, because we always hear about the talented guys being the biggest pain in the ass to deal with. I think when you really look at this situation, though, your old Ferrari engine, Sauber literally should be last everywhere. They're not necessarily that way because the C36 is a pretty good chassis. I think when you get a chance to see the fact that he has missed two races and still has more points than Danny Kvyat, who has run all the races in a Toro Rosso, that speaks volumes when a Sauber can do that. I mean, that puts Marcus Ericsson to shame. That puts Danny Kvyat to shame. That puts anybody else that's in the field really underneath that tier to shame. So I think that if there is somebody to bet on, I don't think you go. And if you're Toro Rosso, if you want a current guy outside of a reservist, outside of obviously they can't go and get Lando Norris from the McLaren deal, they'll stick him in Super Formula if they have to. And they're not going to go after somebody like Felix Rosenquist, who also is a Mercedes driver. I think really your options are to stay within the paddock right now. Who else do you really bring in if you're going to get rid of Kvyat?
As you say, I mean, it is a difficult situation for them, but as you said, they bought in Vettel from outside of their sort of training school, if you like, want of a better word. But he was an exception to the rule, I think. I don't think Wehrlein has done enough to really warrant that sort of that level of movement. There's just, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he has outscored Ericsson, in points, and he has at times put the Sauber where it probably doesn't deserve to be. But there's just been nothing spectacular about him. He has this air about him, and similar with, Kvyat as well. They both have that similar sort of attitude and way they carry themselves. And I really do think that he is, he's probably done. I think Red Bull would rather, punt on somebody that is a complete sort of left field pick rather than go to a, Mercedes reject.
Alrighty then. There you go.
Alrighty then. Well, that being said, man, we are overtime, green, white, checker time. We don't need a red flag tonight. So with that being said, I'm just going to go around the panel, all six of you guys. One final thought from everybody for the night. I'm going to start with you, Christopher DeHardy. Final
Suzuka
thought
picks.
For the night. No, Suzuka picks Hamilton. There you go.
I'm not picking Hamilton. You yeah. lost your damn mind.
All right, Suzuka picks real quick. Chris.
Raikkonen.
Okay. Richard.
Vettel.
Joey.
Can I pick Vettel also, or
sure.
is that not allowed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Vettel.
Yeah,
Vettel
it
is.
Formula One, there's not enough people that win that we can't have multiple picks. Aaron.
I'll be that guy and pick Hamilton.
Okay. So.
I'm going to go with Hamilton.
Okay, Gray.
Hate you both.
Vettel. He's got to start closing the gap.
All right, now I'll pick Lance Stroll. So.
All right.
No, I'll pick Bottas. Okay, final thoughts for the night. Let's go around the table. Chris.
SEC runoffs for this past weekend. Amazing to see almost 1,000 cars race. This coming weekend, though, is going to be even better for racing when you have Suzuka, Petit Le Mans, Bathurst 1000 over in Australia. It's going to be a great weekend, y'all. You should really take the time to enjoy it.
And Petit Le Mans will see Castro Neves and Montoya in the Penske car, correct?
With Pagano.
And yeah. And Simon, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Great.
Going against Rebellion Racing, too.
I mean, that's going to be good stuff to watch, yeah. Gray, your final thought for the night?
We're going into the first race of the next round of playoff events for NASCAR. Should be pretty exciting. We're going to have to see some guys start to make some moves and try to secure a good base for their next run in the playoffs.
Fantastic. Seth, final thought for the night.
Not only did we have the Xfinity Series and Cup Series at Dover, we also had the NASCAR Can-Am Pro Series East. Harrison Burton not only won the race, but won the championship. He became the youngest champion in series history.
Now, is that Jeff Burton's kid?
That is Jeff Burton's kid.
Oh, yeah. I've been reading some good stuff on that kid. So, man, you know, good stuff, man. Burton's great Virginia family. I've always liked him. Now, Gray, I know you worked with Ward Burton for a while, too. You were on a Daytona 500 winning effort with him.
Right. Worked for both of them. Worked with Jeff Ward, too, yeah. Bill Davis, and Jeff at RCR. Yep. Think a lot of the Burton family.
Yep. Great family. Good to see the youngest one doing well. Aaron Bearden, last thought for the night.
Well, Frank, first of all, I was about to give you a penalty for missing lug nuts when you picked Lance Stroll, but you went back on it, so I'll let that pass. Two quick things. One, there's this kind of good driver in the Cup Series named Jimmy Johnson that none of us picked. He had a subpar round one last year, won the first race of the next two rounds, and kind of sort of won the championship, so maybe that's on us. We'll see. And two, well, first of all, I had fun tonight. Thank you guys for having me. But also, I'm going to be doing something a little different and going to Winchester Speedway for the Winchester 400 Super Late Model race this weekend. But I'm going to be hoping they've stepped their service signal up because I'm going to be trying to stream Petit Le Mans on my phone while I'm there.
Well, good luck. Good luck. I've been to that part of the country. So just get near a cell timer, climb up it. So Joey Barnes, last thought for the night.
Yeah, we're coming up to Charlotte. It's supposed to be the very last race of the Charlotte 1.5-mile oval era as far as in this part of the season, the fall round. It's supposed to go to road course next year. And for the life of me, I don't advocate a million 1.5-mile races, but I certainly don't advocate a road course at a mile-and-a-half track whenever we could have this race run at a lot of prominent road courses everywhere else. Road Atlanta comes to mind, Road America. There's a lot of good tracks with facilities in place that NASCAR should probably try and check out if they want to get out of their own comfort zone every once in a while. They might be able to, you know, actually gain some new fans. So that's my final thought for the night.
Absolutely. Yeah, going out, you know, throwing in Mid-Ohio, too. You know, Mid-Ohio puts on a pretty good Xfinity race there as well. So another one we can maybe get the Cup Series at. So, Richard, your final thought for the night?
Charlotte. So the you know, all the teams will be running their super speedway cars for that event, so it wouldn't be a quick turnaround on the cars, but that could make it an interesting few days to get the logistics sorted. Thankfully, they'll be close to home, but yeah, if anybody's going down for the race on Sunday, they may have to wait a few days.
All right, guys. Yeah, so that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank all six of you guys for coming on the show. I want to thank iHeartRadio for hosting us, iTunes, SoundCloud, and I want to thank Hoobazoo Radio Network. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. Guys, we'll talk to you in a week. This is Drafting the Circus. Good night.
Who? 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 Who?